This is the Home Tech Podcast, show number 67, recorded on March 22nd, 2012. I am your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here. We had the best day ever in Bellevue, Nebraska, and posted each week with world-class show notes out at theAverageGuy.tv. You can contact the show, podcast at theAverageGuy.tv. Track me down on Twitter, at Jay Collison. And if you want to follow the show schedule, I opened up a new Twitter account that I just tweet what's going on with the show, whether we're having it on time or not. And tonight we moved it from 7 p.m. Central to 8 p.m. Central. So I appreciate you you guys moving with me. That is just theAverageGuy.tv, all one word. That'll be in the show notes as well. We continue to try to make it easy to listen to the podcast, and we just recently moved at least an RSS feed over to Stitcher. So if you're a Stitcher listener, that means you can listen to it on your iPhone, your Android phone, Kindle Fire, and other devices that have the Stitcher app. I think there's even one for your, what was that, HP touchpad? No, what, yeah, it was an HP touchpad, right? How quickly I forget. Stitcher's a smart radio for your phone. Find that app in the app store of your choice, or at Stitcher.com. We also have the links to automatically download the podcast to iTunes, Zune, or most other pod catchers, and they're on the front page of theAverageGuy.tv, so just head out there, and all the links that you'll ever need are there. You can find us on Facebook by searching The Average Guy Podcast, and please add some comments there, votes, likes, comments, whatever the social platform is. Pimp us out. That always helps get the word out. All right. Tonight, I've got my buddies, the good old faithful stand-ins, and a guy I've been podcasting with for a long time, and no guest to the show, but he's a guest tonight, John Zadler. John, how are you doing?
Hi, Jim. I'm doing good. See, and I even remembered to take my mute off, so you can tell I'm a professional.
You are. You're a pro. Of course, podcast with me over at the HomeServerShow.com tonight. When we jumped in, I said, boy, it feels like it's just been 24 hours. And it's literally been 24 hours since we did a podcast. And John, you're always willing to fill in when we're short on folks. And Gordon Schmidt was scheduled to be on tonight. He, actually his wife, I've been joking all week that he had a baby, but his wife had a baby last week. And Gordon's taken some time off. So Gordon, we miss you tonight. And John, thanks for filling in. Always good to have you on the show. Of course, on the very top of my screen and on the top of yours as well is Christian Johnson. Of course, Christian is behind all things that have to do with BIOS. Thank you. BIOS mods or BIOS modifications, and is recently going to be an intern at NASA this summer. Christian, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. Crazy for Buffalo to have extraordinary summer weather. Normally there's still snow on the ground right now. Almost hit 80 today, just kind of ridiculous. I mean, ski slopes were still open around this time last year, so it's like we kind of skipped right into summer. Weird, but cool.
You guys didn't get any snow, right?
Yeah, we had a little like in the middle, but nothing compared to what a Western New York kind of snow is.
Yeah. Normally you get that lake effect, or is that right? You get some lake effect snow, and
most of it's lake effect.
Piles up in feet. Yeah, it's been an odd winter all the way around. John, you were telling me yesterday that you needed a winter to come back so you could cool down a little bit, right?
Yeah, it was too hot. I was working. I have a tent trailer that I pull out of storage, and I started working on that to clean it up and air it out. And it's like, boy, it's just so hot working. I got to run in the house and try to hide in the shade and stuff. It's like, and you're looking forward to winter again. It's like, and down the street, like some of the trucks there, right? They move the snow into a big pile, so like it's mountain. So in those areas, there's still some snow. The rest of the place is all dry. It's like beautiful warm summer's day, but some places you still see these big snow piles and stuff. So here I am saying, oh, I'm looking forward to winter. But no.
Well, I think summer's on its way. We were like 65, and we have just a light breeze, and it was the most delightful day. I went out for a run, and I just didn't want to come back in. I told the guys running with, maybe we should just get our long run out of the way today. We've got a half marathon this weekend for training. And I said, maybe we should just get it out of the way today, stay out here for another hour, and log another 7 or 8 miles. And we didn't, but the weekend's going to look, at least here in Omaha, it's going to look even better. So kind of some crazy weather across the country, and some crazy tech going on out there as well, of course, with the iPad announcement and a lot of other things going on. We'll talk tech tonight. I did mention in the opening of the show that we are now on Stitcher, Stitcher.com. Of course, Stitcher is a kind of an internet radio or an aggregator of podcasts. And so if you're kind of new to podcasting, and I always open the show with the announcements of, you know, having the links over for iTunes and for your RSS feeds to get it automatically. Some of you may still be coming back to the website to listen to the show. Stitcher is a pretty nice and a pretty easy application to use. It's available for just about every platform that's out there, both mobile and on the web. And you can kind of create a playlist. You can just go out there. I'll include the link in the show notes. But if you just search for Home Tech Podcast, we'll show right up, and you can subscribe to the show and listen to it out there. So another way of doing that. I'd be interested to see how much traction we get from Stitcher. It's a pretty big platform now. And so that is available as well. I'd asked a couple month ago or so if anyone was listening to us through iTunes, and I got about 8 or 9 responses from you, so I appreciate those back. Would be, if you're not getting it through iTunes, I'd kind of like to hear from you on how you are getting it. So what other platforms are you using to get it? I get some of that information through my FeedBurner feeds. I can kind of tell where you're coming in, but it'd be good to know. Shoot me a note. You can do it on Twitter, at Jay Collison, or send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. We'll go from there. Okay, we did have a question. I want to get right to it. Michael Burris out in Google+. He's one of the guys in my circles out there somewhere, and we've chatted. Michael, thank you for your question. But it's kind of interesting. I didn't think there was anybody who hadn't used Skype to this point, but Michael says, I've got some questions about Skype, and I thought you'd be the best to ask. So thank you for thinking that we would be the best to ask on this. Maybe you could do an overview on Skype on the show, and that's what we are doing. First of all, I'm new to Skype. My main use, I said initially, will be to conduct video chats with friends and family. That's perfect. That's what it's best at. I looked at Skype because it can run on a PC and an iPad. So first question, how does Skype work with the user account and multiple clients? And that's a great question, because I think there's a little bit of a mystery there with Skype and how that works. We'll talk about that. He continues, for example, if I create a user account, then sign into the account with my phone, my laptop, and my desktop, how does it know where to route a call? Does it just notify all at the same time, and then the first to answer gets it? Does this cause conflicts? Should I have separate user accounts for each device that I own? All right, that's his first question. I'll read a second one, then we'll dive right in. Two, does the iOS client work over 3G or 4G cell network, or is it only Wi-Fi? Well, I understand that the FaceTime app only works over Wi-Fi. It also doesn't work across platforms. Does Skype client follow similar restrictions? So, Michael, thanks for your question. Two really good ones. We'll talk a little bit about Skype in that. I did want to open up with just a little background on Skype in case most folks I know have it. But Skype is a relatively mature product, although that's kind of hard to believe in some ways. There's as many problems as we seem to have had with it. As we've used it for a podcasting platform, John, geez, we go back on the Home Server Show to 2007?
Yeah.
2007?
Well, I think Dave started the podcast in November 2007, and we might have started the following year, maybe in the springtime.
Yeah, early 2008, actually before the Microsoft acquisition of it. It goes way back to 2003 when it was first launched in 2003, and actually by a couple guys in Sweden. And I remember actually being in an airport. It went and hearing some news reports about Skype. And it's really, you know, it's both a chat client and a video client, an audio and video client all in one. And to that point, if you go back and think, we look at chat services like AOL or MSN or ICQ. John, if you think back to 2003, was anybody doing video yet?
No, I think early video is too early.
Skype was pretty. Was Skype video at that point, or was it only audio?
I would say only audio. I don't know for sure, but I've only been using Skype audio, maybe video, the past few years, past 5 years.
So it kind of started as I think voice only, and then has moved on to the video. You know, the video platform in the last 5 or 6 years. John Stessman out in chat says he had a question mark around my calling it a mature platform. You know, it is almost 10 years old, and I think some of the problems that Skype suffers from is maybe being in a couple different hands. So eBay bought Skype, I think back in 2005, in an attempt to integrate it into its auction platform. And the whole idea is that users, it would connect users to users in an auction so they could actually talk to each other. I don't know about you guys, but the last thing I want to do in one of those auctions is talk to the seller, right? Isn't that kind of the beauty of eBay, is that you don't have to talk to them?
Yeah, that's the thing, is you want to keep it in a way like impersonal, you know, because that's it. Once you add, you know, language, you know, then you start to make, you know, assumptions, you know, the person, who, you know, how old they are, how young they are, you know, their nationality and stuff like that. And then also the way somebody might pose a question to you and stuff like that, you know, you might be offended or you know, whatever, you know, you don't know how to take it, you know. So
right.
It's a bit like, at least when it's text, then it's like, mind you, text, it's like, you have to kind of think about, you know, you sometimes you don't know what the person is getting at, you know. So each one has its advantages, you know.
Well,
just
and
text,
I think
just video or just audio.
In an auction, you know, it's the seller's goal to stick it to the buyer, and the buyer's goal to stick it to the seller, and right. And so the other thing Skype did early on was to put actually a browser plugin that would change any phone link into a it would create a Skype link that when you clicked on the phone number, it would call that person through Skype. And there was kind of a Skype model to make some money on Skype to landline calls. Skype to Skype has always been free. It's always been a free service from them. Recently, then Skype began to sell Skype to landline calls and landline in. Those have cost, and that costs as little as, I think, a couple cents a minute, or for maybe 1 cent a minute, and you can also buy Skype plans. A couple years ago, we purchased group video chat. That was about $100. They just recently lowered the price of that to $60 a year in their Skype premium. So they're trying to get, in 2011, Microsoft purchased Skype and have made some changes to the Skype platform, as well as standardizing their subscription processes. So a little background on what Skype is and what it did. And where it's at. And it has, for a long time, it really had become, long time, listen to me, for the last 3 or 4 years, it's become kind of the de facto standard for podcasting. And Leo Laporte made kind of it famous with his, he had what was called a Skype-asaurus. It was a big Skype platform built with multiple PCs where he could bring folks in, just like we're doing right now on the video chat. He could bring multiple people in, they would all come into one board, and then you could get their video from them, and that would all come together in one feed, and then he would feed that out as a broadcast. And Leo Laporte actually kind of made what we do from a podcasting perspective. He was kind of the pioneer of, I think, the pioneer of what we do from a podcasting standpoint. And now, of course, Google Hangout is a competitor with Skype, and there's a whole bunch of other services around Skype. Christian, have you used anything else video-wise, audio and video, besides Skype?
I've used MSN a little bit. I know some of my other friends will use Uvu for some of their group videos. So,
John, have you used any others besides Skype?
Let me see. MSN Messenger, but only usually typing. No, I've played around maybe 5 years ago. I played around with the video and or the audio, just the audio. And I find the connection was always breaking up. It wasn't like as good, I guess, as Skype, as when I tried Skype. Skype was when I moved over to Skype, there was already like more reliable, whereas MSN Messenger it wasn't. So one thing I like about Skype is like one of my nieces went on she went traveling. I think she went to India, and you know, she just bought her laptop and she put Skype on there, and then she called her dad. I think her dad got like she called him on his phone, so he had to get those credits, right? Those minutes, like you were saying before.
Mm-hmm.
But her, she would log on to a laptop. Because, you know, sometimes people have to, you know, if you have a cell phone or whatever, you have to make sure they have a certain type of service or that it's available and this and that. Whereas, you know, if you have a nice little laptop, you just go to an internet cafe and use your Skype, and you can talk for as long as you want.
Yeah,
so,
right.
So that's one nice thing about Skype.
Skype kind of changed the game when it came to video conferencing, when they rolled out video, because you could go point to point fairly easily and for free. And like John, like you said, any internet cafe would give you the ability to make the call. Christian, I know you guys use Skype. I mean, you're at this point, you guys kind of use it as a homework facilitator, right?
It's a homework hub. Whenever we have major unit tests or exams, a couple guys will just all hop on there and get out their notes, and we kind of go around in the circle and cross info and facts back and forth and come up with stuff. So,
yeah, and so you leave your Skype open, and then, I mean, we do the same thing, and actually since we've moved to Google Plus on the Hangouts, that we use the Hangouts for the podcasting now, but I still use Skype as the primary method in which I talk to all you guys. Because everybody we do, I mean, because we use Skype for 3 years for podcasts, we're all there, and everybody seems to leave that open as an instant messaging client.
Yeah.
So we start in Skype almost all the time. The messages start in Skype, and then for the podcast, we open a Google Plus Hangout, and everybody kind of joins in. It's still, I don't think it's still as easy to do instant communication or being, you know, the chat feature of it. I don't think Google Plus is as easy to use for that as Skype is. I think that that instant messaging works very, very well in Skype.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things, one of the other interesting things about video chat is that I thought in 2003, 2004. I mean, I've had high speed internet since 1998, 99. When it first became available on cable, we purchased it. And I really thought the future was in video, was in this idea of these video phone calls. But it really, for the most of the 2000s, for that decade, people kind of resisted video chat in a lot of ways. It did not expand as much as I would have thought it would have to the average user. Geeks use it. You know, we use it, and we're very comfortable with it. But I think your average guy kind of resisted. And I'm going to say they resisted because they didn't want people to see them. You know, there was kind of like, oh, hey, I just woke up and I'm not really interested in you seeing my face. Or
yeah.
I didn't put my makeup on, or I didn't, you know, my hair is not combed.
House is a mess.
Yeah. There is a real resistance for people to want to show that. Now, you know, so look at us for a second. So, John, you've put a screen behind you, right, for a lot of the things that you do. So you've kind of simplified your background with a screen. I spent a weekend and a couple $100 to kind of put this facade of – I wouldn't say it's a facade. It's real. But I got a bookshelf behind me with some tech equipment to kind of dress up the background. Christian, we're seeing the back corner of your room, and you're okay with that. I would actually
make
say,
his bed though before he gets on.
That's right.
Keep well, it clean. Sometimes Gary just comes in and crawls in bed and takes a nap while Christian's on the podcast. Christian, do you ever think when you're on Skype, do you ever worry about what's going on behind you?
Nope.
Yeah.
Johnny, I just tune it out.
Yeah. You ever care kind of what you're wearing or what your hair looks like?
Not really. No. I mean, they like people my age. You'll notice, especially like once people are out of my age group, if you don't know the person for the first time, or if it's like a first time Skype video with someone who's older, they get like really weird. Like, oh my gosh, this is like Skype video. They're actually going to see me on a computer. And I've had like friends' parents who won't walk in front of a computer screen if their kid's on Skype because they get freaked out that their kid's friend is just going to see them. And, you know, it doesn't matter if they know the kid or not. They just they get weird like that. So I think it's something that, you know, the younger generation doesn't mind as much because
we
kind of grew into it.
Right. Yeah, I think this is one of those perfect examples of a generational gap that is very, very evident in this idea of going on video. And because there are some folks who, you know, who just don't want to be a part or don't want to be on video for whatever reason, that kind of freaks them out. My kids don't even think twice about it for the most part. I mean, they just use it like a tool. They just jump on, they do it. You know, there's kind of I think your generation will suffer from a lack of privacy, you know, for the most part, right? I mean, you guys kind of live your life out there. John, when you started doing video chat, were you hesitant at first to try it? Did you have to kind of warm up to it, or was it something that you just kind of jumped right into?
Yeah, I guess I had to kind of warm up to it, because it brings that extra level, right? Because just like we were saying before, like, you know, when you have just texting, you know, you have certain kind of like expectations, or, you know, you can live inside that box. Once you start adding audio, it's like, oh, it's a different perception. And then now you go into the next level, video, you know? Just like, you know, like they talk sometimes like in the movies, you know, like now with the high def recording and stuff like that, you know, all these actors, you know, you can see all their little pimples and this and that. So some guys are saying, you know, we don't want that good, such good quality, because it's picking up everything, you know? So you can kind of imagine how that kind of, you know, for us who's like, you know, let's say you're not used to being on video, then you are in video, and it's like, oh, you know, like you mm-hmm. said before, did I fix my hair? How do I look and stuff like that? Because it's another element and stuff. And then, you know, sometimes, you know, maybe you feel a little bit silly. Maybe you feel a little bit, you got certain, I don't know, mannerisms or whatever like that. You know, you, I don't know, maybe you always scratch your nose and this and that, or fix your hair and stuff like that. So sometimes, you know, you start to be conscious about those things. But then, you know, it's just like doing podcasts, right? I mean, when we were on the first few podcasts, it's like you're nervous talking this and that. But then after a while, when you get used to it, you know, it's second nature. You're used to it. So, but I do remember you were saying a little bit before is some of my family members there. It's like I remember a few years ago, or even now sometimes, less now. But, you know, you take a video camera and you're videotaping people, and they like they wave, they look at you, they don't talk. It's like they got this like old style, old fashioned thinking. Like, no, it's not like a Charlie Chaplin. It's not no sound. You know, there's video. You can talk. You know, go ahead and talk. You know, whereas I guess that's it. Maybe the younger kids, it's like you say, they just grew up into it. You know, so
yeah, I just don't think they see the same. They don't have the same hang-ups with it. I think it's been harder for my generation. So, you know, the 35 to 45 group, or let's say 35 to 50, I think it's been a lot harder for them to embrace the idea of video. I mean, audio is enough for a while. You know, John, when we first started in the home server show, I don't think I saw you. We did all audio at that in those days, and Skype didn't have the ability, or either that or they charged for it, to do group video chat. And it was a big deal. I remember it was a big deal when I bought, you know, I bought that, the ability, and we started doing video podcasts.
So that's what he looks like.
Yeah. No, it's funny because I podcasted with Chris Lux for maybe a year before I actually met him for the first time. And I remember the first time I met him at CES, he came out good, Andrew says he's on his way. He says, ready or not, I'm on my way. So we'll have Andrew here in a second. And Andrew's a good example of that as well. I remember the first time I met Chris in the hallway there at CES. It was almost like, because I talked to him on video so much, it was almost like it wasn't that awkward, you know, when you meet somebody for the first time and you actually meet him. I felt like I knew him. And I think that's the game changer of video. In this is that, John, if you and I, you know, we've never met in person, right? We've spent hundreds of hours talking to each other via video. And I think if we met, you know, if I came out there, you came out here, I don't know if that would be that awkward. I mean, it'd be like, hey, okay, let's, you know, we know each other because we've seen each other on video.
That's it. The only surprise is that's it. It's like the person's there in front of you. So now because on video, you can't really tell how tall the person is compared to somebody else. And stuff that those type of things, you know, it's like he's a real person.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
does exist.
Yeah, it's and I think in the enterprise so Michael, if you're listening, we'll get to your questions here in just a second. I think in the enterprise, I really do think the future of productivity exists among a global staff that is connected via video conferencing. And Christian, I say that because I watch you guys do that. Your generation is so good at that, at just getting on and collaborating online. I would tend to think, or I would tend to believe, that you guys don't really separate being in person or being online. You don't see the difference between those two environments. You're probably the same in person as you are online now.
Yeah, I mean, with friends, yeah. There's still that gap for either people you've never met or older people. But yeah, like if I'm at school and then I come home a couple hours later and start a study hangout on Skype, there's no difference.
Yeah.
Absolutely no difference.
Yeah. No. And I think that's the relationship, we have in this podcasting stuff that we do. And now we've expanded that community with a Google Hangout idea where guys who aren't typically on the podcast, on Rich's podcast on the weekends, Rich's random podcast that we do on Sunday afternoons, we expand that group out to 8 or 9 guys who can jump in and kind of chat. And so that community has gotten even larger. And so, Christian, you're in Buffalo. I'm in Nebraska. John, you're in Montreal. We're going to bring Andrew in here in a few minutes, and he's in Melbourne. It's not an odd. That's not odd anymore, right? I mean, here we are in three very. I mean, we're separated by thousands of miles, and it's just not an odd. We don't treat it like it's a novelty. It's not like, oh, it's the miracle of flight. This is just like, yeah, you can jump on and. We can be very productive. I mean, oftentimes I'm done with the show. I produce the show. Andrew types up the notes. We'll jump on chat, and we can collaborate very, very quickly. Tim says out in chat, it's no different than a phone call. I do think video chat is way different than a phone call. Because for me, I read people's and Tim, maybe I misread your question, but. This is a good point, is video chat is the game changer in the sense that I can read the expressions on your face. And for me, when I'm negotiating or when I'm working with someone and I make a statement, the next statement I'm going to make is going to be based on what John's face looks like.
You're rolling your eyes.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, I can't tell you how many conference calls that I've done where there's no video present, and God, I am totally distracted in the background because nobody's watching me. But if the video is on, I have to be engaged. I can't be, looking all around or goofing off. I've got to be engaged in the video conference. And so as we work in a more diverse or separated work culture, I do really think the success is going to be driven by how quickly that workforce can use video conferencing. And it used to, 25 years ago during the first Gulf War, I was deployed down to Southern California for a couple months. And the military brought us into this big, at that point they were using satellite conferencing, this big facility, and there was these big screens. And my wife was at Fort Ord in Monterey, and I was down in Southern California, and we did this video conferencing, and it had to cost the military thousands of dollars to run it and millions of dollars to build it.
It was a big deal.
Yeah. Today, that is free. And so it's quite amazing. Andrew, welcome to the podcast. Are you there? He's trying to get in. And can't hear us yet. Wink your eyes, Andrew. Wink your eye, or give me a thumbs up when you're in. You probably still can't hear us. Okay. So John Stussman was just saying in chat, you should have seen John helping me via Skype repair my version 1. It was amazing. That's another thing we've used Skype for, is kind of the helping each other. You can turn that camera right on your equipment. And the other person can kind of see what you're doing. Okay, show me what the problem is, or show me what your motherboard looks like. In Google Hangouts, there's now screen sharing. Show me what you're seeing. If you use GoToMeeting or something like that, that costs $70 a month or $50 a month. Google Hangouts, or on Skype, point to point, you can do it for free. Andrew, can you hear us yet? Yeah. Or I need to show Andrew why his audio isn't working. check your Skype or check your Google Hangout settings. You might have to reboot. You can hear us though, right? Shake your head up and down if you can hear us. Yeah. So you can hear us, but we can't hear you. That has been then on the backside of let's talk a little bit about the problems of Skype or these things. John, you and I have had enough problems with Skype to last us a lifetime, right? I mean, audio consistency, and to get Michael to get kind of to one of your questions without actually getting to the question, one of the hangups with Skype, especially in group chat, is Skype is very point to point, and the weakest link in the conversation brings the entire conversation down to your level. So if everybody has super good bandwidth and one of the people on the call doesn't, Skype will just have problems. And John, I can't tell you, with Dave's bad bandwidth on the home server show, right? We kind of suffered through that for a long time. But Google Plus Hangout, and Andrew, maybe a few tests, and then I'll tell you when we hear you. Google Plus doesn't act that way. They come back to the Google servers, and so if you have somebody with bad bandwidth, not everyone suffers. That's one of the reasons why I've preferred Google Plus for podcasting as opposed to Skype, just because Skype gave us so many issues. A lot of folks have complained at any given time. There's 20 million people on Skype using it, something like that. That's just a big round number. It's a heavily used service. Christian, do you guys have any Skype problems when you're doing the Hangouts?
No, actually, we all have pretty good connectivity now. We don't pay for group video, so normally it's audio to audio if it's more than two people. But even like my dad and I will be lazy to the point where he'll be in his cave down in the basement and I'll be all the way upstairs. So we'll just leave a Skype video feed running if we're doing tech stuff across the house. And that always runs very smoothly. And again, it's going to the same internet line, but it still has to go back to Skype's out to Skype servers and come back. It's not like it's internal Skype or anything. So.
Right. And John, are you using Skype for video much anymore? Have you kind of cut over to Google Plus, or where are you at with Skype these days?
Well, that's it. I have it, default to on. So because that's usually with Google Plus, it's you got to kind of log into the browser. I'm not always sitting it with, let's say, some kind of little app going in the background. But that's it with Skype. It's usually there. But that's it. That's usually the first contact is to. It's like that's it with multiple. Again, when we're doing the podcast or whatever, we're getting in a few people. So just like Christian said, if you're gonna go just audio, then maybe you can have a few people, more than two, on Skype. But when you want to have video with more than two, then Google Hangouts is and they kind of came in pretty strong, right? I don't find that the Google really had too much growing pains. Not as much as like you're saying. It's not like 10 years worth of growing pains like with Skype there. They kind of already came in and had some kind of infrastructure there going there and stuff. So I use that mostly. Sometimes I like playing around with Hotmail, like MSN Messenger, because one of the things with MSN Messenger that gives you is the again, a Microsoft product, right? They have like their media player, and you know how you can stream your media, so you can actually log in at two places, so you can have it on at home and then log into your live account at work, and stream your music that way. So they got a little bit of that extra functionality, but that's probably only used more for the geeks,
Right, right. So, and Yahoo Messenger is in the same boat. Yep, Andrew, I think we hear you now.
Oh my God, it's working.
Speaking of working, Andrew, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, everybody.
How you doing?
Oh, getting absolutely hammered.
Yeah.
The next time Microsoft release a critical patch, I don't want to know about it.
Ignorance is bliss, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Next Tuesday.
Andrew, can you kind of give? I don't want to. Let's take a quick break from the Skype discussion. And can you give a quick rundown of the hell that has been your life over the last
a couple of weeks,
week or two, and why that was bad?
Yeah. So in one of the patch cycles early this month, I think it was. 13th of March, Microsoft released published a vulnerability in the remote desktop service, which runs on pretty much all flavors of operating system from Windows 2000 up. And the vulnerability had some code released into the hacker community last weekend, the 17th, or the 16th for North America. And that code that was released by a Microsoft development partner of all people, if that is crafted into a virus, they're saying it'll become the next configure. So Configure was the virus in 08, I think it was, that pretty much decimated a lot of businesses by, mm-hmm. you know, shunting itself around various networks and, you know, just not a malicious payload, just a real pain in the neck for anyone supporting an IT system.
Right.
So we've been furiously deploying this patch throughout all of our enterprise business partners. I think across the globe, HP's deployed it well over, you know, half a million devices already. And the space that I work in particular, we've got about 700 machines, and we're about 200 into it now.
Yeah, and so and some people are saying, well, why it's such a big deal? Because, you know, for most people, right, the patch came out, it's been installed, they've rebooted their PC, and they're good to go. But what most people don't realize is in the enterprise community, enterprise administrators are a lot more
paranoid.
Yeah, well, they just don't deploy the patches as much.
True.
As quickly, right?
Yeah, that's right. And a lot of patches are sociability tested against various corporate applications and the like as well. So it's not just a matter of, you know, turn on automatic updates and away it goes. It's also the whole, you know, make sure that when you put something out into your environment, you don't just totally trash your application stack as well.
Right. Yeah. And so they're on the enterprise side, we're a little bit more cautious and say, oh, we want to test these things. However, in this case, the code got released into the wild and would allow anybody. And then all of a sudden now you can't wait to patch. Typically most enterprises patch on a quarterly cycle or monthly. It kind of depends on their business.
It depends on the business. My particular client, they patch monthly or quarterly or 6 monthly, depending on which one of their business units it is. So my client's a gambling business, so anything that's a revenue generating system, of course, they want that up as long as possible.
Yeah.
With as many outages or as few outages as possible. So, you know, it's a very delicate balancing act when you come to trying to, you know, patch 400 devices that are all part of a wagering engine, for example.
Yeah. Hey Andrew, we're getting some variation in your sound volume, and I know that's Google making an attempt to. one of the beauties of the Google Hangout is that it takes control of your microphone, and then tries to do that. Maybe if you move that back down closer to your mouth, that might. Yeah, we'll just have to see. We'll see if that'll.
Cool.
There's no way. One of the things I wish Google Plus would change in their Hangouts is the ability to lock in the volume. That's something you can do in Skype. Is you can either let the software automatically kind of detect your sound volume and then it tries to adjust it for you to make it optimal, or you can lock it in and say, don't screw with my volume or my speakers. Just
it's kind of nice.
Yeah, let me decide. Well, you know, Google not being as a mature product or not wanting to give the user any control over that has just tries to optimize it for you. In this case, Andrew, it's trying to listen for your sound, and then it gets louder, and then you speak, and then it drops down, and so we just get a little change in your sound quality. We were talking about Skype and the beauties of Skype. Andrew Burris had sent me an email, and one of the questions in that he had said is, how does Skype work with a user account on multiple clients? And the basis of the question is, if I've got Skype on my PC and on my laptop and on my phone, basically, or my iPad, and I've got them all turned on and logged in, and someone calls me, what's the user experience?
Awesome.
Ooh.
Well, yeah.
A lot of echo.
What my user experience is, they all ring.
They right? all ring.
Until and then, I pick one of them up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my user experience is totally different. If I've got the touchpad signed in, two PCs and a mobile phone, it'll just pick one at random.
To ring? To ring?
Yeah, to ring.
Okay.
So I can be sitting in front of the PC if the touchpad's signed into Skype, and I'm sitting out, say, in the lounge room, I'll hear the PC ringing and the touchpad does nothing. Or just the Android phone.
I wonder if that's because if you specify a mobile device with your Skype account and it sees it logged in, it'll forward a mobile, because I've had my account signed on multiple and it just rings all of them.
Yeah, don't know.
Is that an option? Hey, Christian, where's that option in Skype?
I'm not sure if there is a place where you set it. I think it checks the device profile when it gets installed.
Okay.
Yeah, I wonder if it makes a change there. That's it. If let's say on your device, let's say if you have it as your status is available. Like, that's it. If different devices you have your status available, not available, then would it ring or not ring, Like, is it actually running there in the background?
Yeah, I know with the iPad, I'm pretty sure the iPad will be the primary device if it's online.
It is kind of a mystery, guys. Yeah. I think in the manual, the perfect answer is this. It rings on all of them. I think there is, though, it also depends on what your status is set to on the device that it's logged in on, right? And so I think if, say, I have it on my PC and my laptop and my phone, and I am set to away on the laptop and the PC, I don't think it'll ring there, and it'll just ring on my phone if that's the one that's set to online. But it does add a level of complexity to which one is going to ring when if you've got
personal
it across, if you're going across multiple devices, I'm not sure anybody knows exactly what's going to happen on those devices, because there are a couple factors involved as far as what's in your profile and are you online on all of them. So on Skype my preference is to be, I only try and log into one at a time, and it's the one I'm currently using. Now, the problem with Skype, and I'm sure you guys have noticed this as well, is if you have a Skype account on multiple PCs, and say you're using your laptop and your PC, and you're using your laptop all day, and Christian, you and I are having a bunch of conversations, right?
Right.
And then I close the laptop and I come home and I log into my Skype account on my laptop or on my PC. It then thinks, oh, hey, I've been offline this whole time. Yeah, like John's saying, John, it kind of store forwards those, and it starts telling you, oh, you've got a message from
50 pings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And on a busy weekend on Skype at one point in time, I might talk to 8 different people, having multiple conversations, both audio video and a chat, right? Maybe a lot of chat. And I might get 8 conversations that pop up on my PC if those were all done on my laptop. That's kind of annoying, don't you think? I mean, it almost stores that information, and then you got to go back and close all those conversations.
Yeah, I've seen that happen. Especially when you're, let's say you turn your device on, or somehow it happens to turn off on, let's say at 2 o'clock in the morning. Now all of a sudden you're getting all those little bleep, 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 conversation with you. Conversation. Bleep, bleep, bleep. It's like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Or imagine if you just get one. It's like, are you there? Let's say, today at 7 o'clock, you say, are you there? But then, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and it goes bleep, and then this is Jim. It says, are you there? But that was from 7 o'clock, So you really got to check the time to see, when that was. Is that a new message, or is that an old message? Because you might be waking him up at 2 o'clock.
Why isn't he answering? Oh, that was yesterday.
Yeah, well, that is, I've had conversations that, I'll get a bunch of them. Yeah, I get a bunch of them back, and I won't read all the way down or whatever, and then I'm answering. Andrew, I think you and I had one of these, is what you're referring to. And
yeah.
So I'll answer a question you asked 2 days ago, thinking you just asked it, and then, and you're like, what? So there is a level of complexity, the Skype multi-point, because it allows multi-point and multi-device, I think it adds a level of complexity that is not necessarily super intuitive to the average user.
Hmm.
And it's only made more complex by multiple mobile devices with Skype on it.
Does your average user have multiple devices running Skype at the same time, though?
I think they're going to as a service here in the future. I think, yeah, I think they're going to for sure. I think it's going to be, you know, it's going to be your phone and your PC or your iPad and your phone. If you're a heavy Skype user, you know, I don't know what those numbers are, Andrew. I just know in my case, it's PC, laptop, phone.
Yeah, yeah,
And so that could be. So I think to answer Michael's question, Michael, it's a little bit of a crapshoot with Skype as to which one is going to ring. You might want to do some testing out with it to see how that works in your environment. So that'll answer question one. Give it a try. It should ring on all of them once you pick it up. That's the one it controls. Just be aware that when you get back to the other device, that call, that chat, that instant message is going to be there on your other device when you get back. This is particularly troublesome on my phone because it's not as easy to clear conversations on my phone as it is to clear conversations on the desktop. And so I just leave my phone. I never sign into Skype on my phone unless I need it. The problem is as soon as I sign in, then all that stuff stores. You know, you can see the problem, right?
Yeah.
Skype and that. And I'm not a big fan. I'd rather be on a Google Hangout for that kind of stuff. Okay, his second question is, does the iOS client work over 3G / 4G or a cell network, or is it only on Wi-Fi? And I don't know the answer to this question because I don't have an iPad. I'm thinking it works best over Wi-Fi. And I don't know if it's – does anybody know? Do you guys know? Is it enabled on the iPad with 3G, 4G?
Or... I don't have an iPad.
I think they started 3G around late 2010.
Okay, so it would be available? So,
tentative, yes. Yeah.
And I should have Googled that before we started the show. I thought maybe somebody would jump in and know. John, you don't know?
No, I don't know. Okay. I don't have a
I'm pretty sure it's
3G device.
The only thing that was...
Go ahead, Christian.
The only thing that was I know there were 3G restrictions at one time with the Android. They opened up the Android package. I actually have a version for 6.5 that's no longer because they don't develop for Windows anymore. But I have the 6.5, the last version that came out of Skype for that phone, and I can make calls over 3G on it. So.
My experience with the iPad on Skype has been with my sister who has an iPad. And when she is anything but Wi-Fi and trying to do video, it's just an absolute disaster. There's a lot of latency, and her video and audio are never in sync. She needs to be on Wi-Fi and have a pretty good Wi-Fi connection to make that work. So my recommendation for iPad folks is, yeah, you can use your 3G connection if you want. I don't know, Andrew, have you tried on your touchpad? You don't have that connected to the phone, right? You're just using that as a Wi-Fi device?
Yeah, typically a Wi-Fi device. So if I need internet access on it, I'll then use the hotspot in my Android phone.
Yeah. Yeah, I would – my recommendation is Wi-Fi for Skype anywhere if you're going to use video. If you're just chatting, if it's just text, yeah. Use whatever. You can always use a dial-up modem for that stuff, but don't try and get audio or video. Well, audio might be okay. Audio doesn't take as much. The Google Plus also works really well on a phone. We've done Hangouts on Android and iPhone devices on Google Plus, and so that might not be a bad route to go either. That seems to work pretty well, and I think it actually works better than Skype on mobile devices to use Google Plus, and I have used my 3G connection to make that work. So I encourage folks to give that a try. The only problem with that is if your whole community is in Skype and then you got to get them all over to Google Plus, that can be problems.
Yeah, it's always a challenge, and then you've got the age barrier too with Google Plus for those who adhere to such things.
Yeah.
Didn't Skype, when was it, 6 months ago or something, that Skype allowed you to add your Facebook users, right? to Skype.
Really? I might have totally missed that, John. I'll be honest.
Yeah, that's how you get the Facebook video calling using
the
Skype module.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and actually, I tried that for a while in Facebook. Right, you use the Skype connector, and the video was actually really, really good. I mean, it was surprisingly good in Facebook. Now, that has been a service that I have not heard anything about since the day it launched. Right? I mean, it's there. It works. You can. There's a little camera icon up there on a friend, and you can click on it, and it will request that they start video chat. That's completely dropped off the radar as far as people actually have. Christian, have you ever used that inside Facebook?
I made like one or two Skype video calls on Facebook.
I think everybody did.
It's really not intuitive. I mean, it's cool that they tried to integrate it. I actually do it the other way around. I have my Facebook chat integrated in my Skype. So, because I don't really creep around on Facebook like most people do. So what I do is I just leave the chat signed in, because I almost always have Skype signed in. So if someone sends me a message on Facebook, it just auto forwards to my Skype, and I can carry on the conversation inside Skype. So I prefer it that way than trying to get through Facebook and have it be all weird like that. And then if the other person doesn't have the Skype plugin, it won't even work. So
right.
See, the thing is, you know, sometimes, like, I find, like, well, I'm not a big Facebook user, but, some people, it's like, they go to Facebook, and they'll probably spend the whole day there. You know, they got 50 or 100 friends there and stuff like that. If I was that type of person, I don't know, I don't think I would want, you know, like, put the eggs all in the same basket, right? I wouldn't want all my Facebook friends on my Skype. It's almost like the Skype is more like, I find, for me, it's more my everyday I'm using it, and I just want the friends that I want, like this, you know, the high level people, you know. I want all the, you know, like sometimes when you start to friend people on Facebook, and it's like, oh, why did I friend them, or how do I get rid of them, and this and that. So it's like I want to keep those two like identities a bit, you know, separate. And say, this is my Skype friends or people that I start with.
That's actually what I do with my MSN, because the only reason I still use MSN chat is for BIOS mods people. So I kind of isolate them off in this little corner of the world where if I happen to log in MSN, they're going to be really lucky. But if not, then I don't have to worry about them harassing me, because you would be surprised how many people, if I sign in and leave my MSN in for a day, it doesn't take more than 24 hours for like three or four guys who were on BIOS mods to start going, oh my gosh, the administrator's online. They all friend at once, and then before you know it, you got five MSN windows open, all these people asking you to look at their request and give them free live support, and it's like, oh, why did I sign in?
You've got groupies, Christians.
Oh, it's
the Christian groupies.
It's called groupie management.
That kind of reminds me. The other thing I like about Skype is it's a quick way to send somebody a file, you know, like one on one.
Oh yeah.
So that, you know, if you have multi, you know, if you want to send your same file to, let's say, 10 or 20 people, then maybe use Dropbox. Because at least this way you can, especially if it's a bigger file, right? Because you upload it to their server, but then if 10 people are getting it, they're not getting it from your location. Whereas, you know, if I sent it to five of you guys, that's, you know, like five uploads.
Yeah.
So, but it's a quick little way that if you have a, you know, a little file and stuff like that, you can just drag it into the window and it'll tell you how many minutes, and then the person will grab it, and it'll give you a little bell when it's done and stuff like that. So that's a cute little option there.
Yeah, we use that for photos a lot, for sending photos back and forth, or like scan documents to people, just drag and drop.
So I mentioned early on Skype had changed their premium account, and they had a couple different pricing options that when Microsoft bought them, they were kind of all over the map on pricing, and Microsoft has simplified that. So today you just buy premium. So there's Skype, which offers four services for free. Skype to Skype video and audio is free. This is funny. It says low rates to landlines and mobiles, and then it says free. So how can it be low rates
and that's pretty
clicked as free? I mean,
because getting the low rate is no cost.
Free. Yeah.
Get low rates, cost you nothing.
No additional cost
when
for low
you
rates.
Make the call.
That's hilarious. Instant messaging, of course, is free, and then it says conference call. So that's, you know, that's kind of, isn't that an audio call? So why, yeah. Anyways, okay. So those are the free services. And then with the Skype Premium, boy, thanks Microsoft for clarifying that. You know,
jeez. The free low cost.
Yeah, the free low cost. Then in Skype Premium, you get the group video calling, which is what we had currently paid $100 a year for. Now down to 60, you get group screen sharing, which didn't exist before. So that's a new service. You know, we couldn't do screen sharing even with the group sharing that I purchased. So that's not a bad deal. No partner advertising. Oh, who cares? Live chat with customer support. That should be free. And then unlimited calling to a country of your choice. So if I click on view countries, it's of course, let's see. So Skype Premium includes unlimited calls to the country of your choice. And that would be the United States and Canada, Hong Kong and Singapore, and then unlimited calls to landlines only in all the rest of the countries. So there you have it. That's the wrap-up on Skype. Premium is $4.99 a month or $60 a year. My recommendation, if you're going to do that and use it heavily, just pay the $60 and be done with it. Skype makes that pretty painless to actually get it purchased. Any other thoughts on Skype, guys?
It's pretty good. I just upgraded mine to 5.8. Actually, my laptop was lagging back on version like 5.1 just because it was riding in the glory days of old Skype, and it still worked really well. But eventually,
you're on 5.8.
Yeah, I moved to 5.8.
That's the newest version. I think I'm still on 5.5.
Yeah, no, the 5.8's got some of the Microsoft. I would just call it Microsoft Beans at this point because they're not new major features, but you can tell it's looking like a Microsoft product again. So,
yeah. Well, I'll have to upgrade and try it. I remember back when we used to upgrade, or it would upgrade itself. One of the nice things that Microsoft brought to the Skype platform was automatic updates that you didn't get a choice on. And so we would all log into Skype before the home server show, and then it would update us and it would break things. And then we're like,
It'll be funny the day Skype updates start coming through automatic updates in Windows.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see that too if they start pushing it out the same as they do, say, Security Essentials as an additional product.
Yeah, you know what else would be interesting is Skype integration in Windows 8 if they do something special for the Metro interface. I would bet money that's a possibility.
Yeah, well, I
think it's on the cards.
I just let me bring that up because I did load Skype on. Do I still have it up? I have Windows 8 up. Let me share this with you guys real quick. Let's see.
Yeah, they'll probably come up with a Metro app, a Skype Metro app.
Yeah, my share screen is broken in the Google Hangout. Well, anyways, I did install Skype on 8, and it worked about half the time right now. So I think there's probably still some things. Let me bring it up right now. It does flip over to the desktop, and then it keeps crashing on me on there from time to time. I'll come back and it'll just hose itself. So I think it would be nice if there was a sandbox Metro app for it, and I imagine that's coming at some point. So did you guys hear this? So now I just signed in on my Windows 8 box, and now it's loading all of the Skype conversations I've had with you guys for the last week.
But it only does that when you've got another Skype client running.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so if you shut down your Skype client on your Windows 7 PC and fired it up, it won't load the history from your other machine.
Okay. Oh, so that's what it's doing, is it's pulling the history. Oh. Well, that's good to know. I did not know.
You got to shut it down first.
Okay. So you got to log off the other one and then log back in so it doesn't load the history. Yeah. Well, you know what?
That's why we have Andrew.
Yeah. That does raise a little bit of privacy concerns in some way that your Skype chat is held somewhere. It's not like it's instant and it goes away.
I think you can set it not to save the history in your computer, though, can't you?
I believe you can. I'm one of these people, though. When I move to a new machine, I copy all the XML history across. Because I think it's an XML file sitting in C users and then under your profile somewhere. So I tend to keep a lot of that kind of thing because I tend to go back and refer to the odd, you know, if someone sends me a, I don't want to say password, but if someone sends me a password or something similar, then I can go back to the history and find it rather than keep it in a password repository.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good option. I've used that sometimes in the past where that's it. It's like, you know, let's say you're talking to somebody and they're sending you links, right? And it's like you don't necessarily want to click on it there, but that's it. They send you a bunch of links, and then later on you can just open that history and go and say, oh, yeah, that's what he pointed to and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, good stuff. I hope that's been a good overview of Skype, and certainly we've been talking about that for a while now, but and hopefully, Michael, we answered your questions. I do take questions for the show, and we do like them. You can just either find me on Twitter or Google+, or send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv, and we'll spend some time covering your questions. Not necessarily, this was not meant to be an exhaustive, all-inclusive coverage of Skype, but certainly the way we use it, and I hope you found it helpful. Okay, I need to issue one retraction, and Christian, this relates to your dad, Gary.
Okay.
So last week on the show, we talked about iVave, iVave.com, the music service that apparently sells songs for a nickel each. You put $10, it's like a jukebox, you put $10 in the machine, and then you can buy songs for 5 cents each there, and they are DRM free, and you can download them, and they're yours to own.
Sounds pretty suspect.
Yeah, well, we talked about it on the show. I went back and listened, and Gary said he hadn't used it, and he was just following up on an MP3 discussion we'd had weeks before about how you listen to MP3s. And since this is the Average Guy podcast, you know, we did not want to lead anyone into a misunderstanding that we were either endorsing or had used that product. Gary was bringing that up to mention the fact that he had seen this. So out on Facebook, if you go, we do have a site on Facebook. If you just search for the Average Guy podcast, and we kind of use it for forums right now. Ernesto brought up a point that he had tried it and used it out and got in there, and some of the music looked good and some of it didn't. He began to get suspect when he saw some varying bit rates in there, and then it looked like there was maybe some bootleg live tracks and some other things. Now, this is what he said, and I didn't experience it.
Now, does it let you download or stream? How does that work?
No, it's download. You purchase and download.
Okay, because I could see, if it was something that was streaming, like Subsonic or something like that, that the bit rates would adjust based on the connection and the profile of that audio track.
But no, these are what they were recorded at. Yeah. And so, Ernesto, first, thanks for going in there and taking, I told him in the Facebook, thanks for taking one on the chin for us. He actually did try it out, and it was a $10 investment, and that's, you know, that's significant enough. But and he was good enough to report back that it may be a little shaky. I did some research to try and see if this was legit or not, and believe it or not, I had a really hard time finding proof either way. The most I could find is that this is an Australian company that uses, their servers are in the Ukraine, and according to Russian copyright law, they can treat that music that you download much like the radio stations do when they play it. And so radio stations pay a cent or something like that per play for the music. And so if they sell it for 5 cents, they pay royalties of 1 cent or something like that, right? It could be different than that, but it's very, very close to that. And the copyright laws in the Ukraine allow for that to legally happen. Now, that brings up an ethical question of, okay, so is that right that they're using, you know, they're basically using the law to kind of, you know, to get around that? And should artists be paid more than a cent for their music? Okay, you have to come to that you've got to come to that conclusion in your own mind, right?
In your own heart.
That is a sticky, sticky issue, and I'm going to neither confirm
nor deny. Ethics for the average guy.
Yeah. Well, it's a great question. And you know, I said in the Facebook post, At the end of the day, you've got to make the choice and be comfortable with it. If you want to go out and download, 200 songs for $10 and or whatever, and you're okay with that, that's your call. John, what do you think?
I agree with you completely.
In what sense?
Well, this the thing they're whatever, you know, if they're paying a dollar and stuff like, or sorry, a penny and stuff like that, you know, like you know, you have to kind of, you know, weigh it, you know, if that's where you want to go, you know, if that's a service you want to use or whatever, you know, like some, you know, like I think there was, I was trying to use, or not myself, sorry, I said myself, but I think my brother or somebody was trying to use Google phone numbers or something, you know, Google, you know, they give you a phone number,
voice.
You know, like it
Google
only
voice.
Works in the States. Mm-hmm. Sorry, what was it called?
Google Voice.
Yeah. Google Voice. Okay, yeah. So that's it. And, you know, it only works in the States, and, you know, it's not applicable to Canadians. And then, you know, but sometimes you can circumvent some stuff, you know, but it's like if it's, you know, if it's a gray area, sometimes, you know, more or less, you know, don't scratch, you know, don't poke the bear.
Yeah.
But, I mean, not related to the discussion at all, but I've been having a ball with Google Voice integration on Sprint, because if you have a Sprint or other related phone, your phone number with Sprint but can be tied to Google, so it doesn't cost you any money to use voice. And that's just phenomenal, the functionality you can get out of it.
Yeah, no, it's powerful. In fact, so powerful it took over my cell phone, and now when I call people, my Google Voice number shows up instead of my regular, and nobody has that Google Voice number. And so I get the, who is this? Or they don't answer the phone, or they get the, who is this? And I send them a text. But yeah, let me wrap up this one final thing here. So, you know, we certainly cover things, and sometimes we don't have the ability, and there's Gary right there. Sometimes we don't have the ability to dive in and check out them. You know, this is whenever we recommend something, it is always up to you and buyer beware on these. You need to do your own homework and make sure it is something that you, thanks, Gary. I appreciate you coming in and making yourself known on the Home Tech Podcast, as he does every. It's a Gary sighting. You know, we almost need to have. Where's Gary? Where in the world is Gary? Anyway,
it's a Gary in the wild.
Ernesto, thanks for bringing that up, though. I do not, and I'm not trying to necessarily brush that off either. Some very important points. One of the nice things I like about the community that we've built around the Home Server Show and now around the Home Tech Podcast is everyone is nice to each other. And this was a very civil conversation that went on around this, and nobody got crazy about it. And so I do appreciate that.
No one hurt in the production of this podcast.
Okay, yeah, no animal testing was done in this podcast. All right, speaking of that, Christian, we're a little short on time, but I do want to cover the few things you dropped in there. So let's pop over to a quick Christian's Corner.
So welcome back to a Christian's Corner after several weeks of interesting absence, but I know you guys were all waiting and drooling with bated breath that it would return, and indeed it has, and now that there's a Where's Gary segment in the works, I mean...
Where in the world is Gary Johnson?
I'm going to need to hire like a jazz band or something to get some intro music going, so...
What did we decide we were going to call Gary's segment? Not Where's Gary, but...
It was earlier this week when we were talking about it, and we said it was
we'll have to go dig that up. We named it really nicely that Gary's got his own segment, but what do you got for us?
So interesting, as Windows 8 news continues to trickle, is that there's going to be Retina display friendly, which means that you're going to get up to 2560 by 1440 in a 10-inch screen space, and that's pretty remarkable because even on the laptops, some of the highest-end laptop graphics, you can fit 1920 by 1080 resolution in the 15-inch screen, and that's really a nice screen. So for them to be talking that they'll support that kind of resolution in that kind of space is pretty big. So,
and that competes directly with the iPad, right?
Yeah.
Watch your screens for the Google Are You Still There notification.
Yeah, and I think is there, John, a new DPI level that's going to be available in Windows 8?
You're on mute, John.
He's still on mute.
John, you're muted.
Let me take my mute off.
There you go.
Yeah, I found a link over at, I'll give it to you guys to put in the show notes. Paul Tarot was talking about Windows 8 there on his site over at the Win Super site, and he's talking about a maximum resolution for Metro apps of being 2560 by 1600. So that's it. You know, I mean, you're going to want to have a nice experience, and I guess that, you know, the whole story I think one of the points with Windows 8, right, the Metro UI is, you know, Microsoft wants a piece of that pie, the tablet pie. You know, they know the PCs are sales are going down and the tablets are coming up, and, you know, they want to take some of that from piece of the Apple pie. You know, so that's it. They got to kind of like, they see that Apple has the edge here with this, you know, with this excellent high quality Retina screen. So, you know, they're talking about how, you know, that would benefit the Metro UI. So, but apparently the high DPI has been around, you know, that's what they always say, these guys. They're like, well, we thought about this forever. You know, we thought about this 2 years ago. It just, we just kind of never, like, pushed that out there. Well, at least Apple got it out there. That's what's important.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
At a cost, which we're going to talk about here in a second.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, we're going to get there. So, first things first, though, my deal of the week. This came super handy. We were doing a network install in a law firm over the course of the last week here or so, and they have a lot of, like, antiquated workstations that weren't connected to the internet at all. And the secretaries and the law people in the firm were just infuriated that they couldn't get on the internet. So, for $20, you can, you know, rather than tearing apart all these computers in the firm and then having to put them back together and then wondering if they have PCI Express or PCI and what they're going to support, Roswell makes these amazing nice cute little USB dongles with a high gain signal. So you get the antenna that actually comes out of the USB. You'll see some USB wireless card models without any antenna. This has got a nice combination antenna. It's got the high gain. Sure, it doesn't get the full 300 megabits per second that a full N card would. It gets the pre-N speed of 150, which really you're not going to notice the difference for the average guy use, at least. And so this meets all your security standards. It comes with its own Roswell wireless management software, which actually can come in very handy with some of the antiquated XP systems. So, like, for example, a lot of the computers had not been connected to the internet for almost 3 years. So they were on Service Pack 2. They didn't have access to any Windows updates or Service Pack 3. And one of the big things was that the Windows wireless software didn't recognize the WPA2 security standard, which is what the wireless network was using. But fortunately, this Roswell card comes with its own software and wireless profile connector that supports WPA2 and everything. So really handy, very easy to install. You literally just plug it in a USB port. It comes with the micro CD instead of the full-size CD. You get one of those cute little mini compact discs. You throw it in, and the driver install happens very quick, and it's really for the cost. I mean, we're looking at $20. Order 5 or 6 of them, pop them in the computer, hit the driver button, and you've just solved the otherwise large wireless headache for devices that are either antiquated or you don't feel like tearing apart. So it's a good bang for the buck.
And you did buy those?
Yep, we put them in two or three systems, and yeah, rock solid.
Very nice.
Yeah.
All right, get to the iPad part.
All right, so this is cool, actually. So everyone's saying, well, I don't know everyone, but when I read news, like, the iPad is overheating, I think, yeah, okay. So there's some geek sitting at his little journaling desk thinking, oh my gosh, there's a 1% difference in heat. This is going to make a great story. But actually, if you look at this video, this really kind of tells it all. And they put an infrared gun to one person sitting in front of an iPad 2 and using it, and one person sitting in front of an iPad 3 using it. And over 15 minutes, it's just incredible how you actually see that, yeah, this thing is heating up like a hot tamale. And just take a look here up on screen. Jim has a screen share.
So there you go, iPad 2 and the new iPad.
Yep. It's just crazy. iPad 2 gets a little heat in the corner by the dock, and then the iPad 3 just goes right over. So you see, okay, there's the boot up. They're using. Guy in the top gets a nice little dot building up. But, yeah, look at the difference here. So you're still seeing the lows about the same, but the difference in high is almost up to a difference of 20. And I think that's, 20 Celsius. and as a difference. And that's only over 15 minutes, so who knows how that would transpire. Yeah, here we see over another 15 minutes.
I want to see the thing red.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we get to that point.
Before it reaches
the flesh. Boiling. It'd be boiling, thank you.
So 90 degrees versus 102 is what they're saying, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, is it really huge? I don't know. I think it's a combination of really it comes down to how much will the internal components be able to stand that difference of 10 Celsius or 20 Celsius.
Well, that's the thing is, right? I mean, heat usually wears out components.
Yeah.
And that's one of the big things about PCs, you know, hard drives and CPUs and stuff like that. You know, the heat usually kills it.
Yeah.
Unless they figure out a new way to do it.
So is it fair to argue that the iPad 3 will be a less of an investment because it'll last less time?
Well, it depends on the technology they're putting into it. And this is a pretty good segue, and I'm going to steal a segue off you here, because Seagate have just hit the 1 terabit per square inch on their drive platters as a result of heat-assisted magnetic recording technology.
So they're using heat as a benefit, is that it?
They're using heat as a benefit to be able to get increased capacity onto their hard drives.
Wow.
So I'll throw the article in the show notes, and you know, this is a bit of a Gary story as well, given that we know Gary loves his hard drives.
Yeah.
But they're saying that the next generation recording technology is heat assisted magnetic, whereas currently they're using perpendicular magnetic recording.
Interesting.
So, you know, I think what we're going to see in respect to thermal output is we're going to see things getting hotter and hotter and hotter as the technology advances and changes.
Now, do you think that would transpire into CPUs and memory? See, I don't see it getting to that kind of component level, do you?
Not for something like for memory, right? But what's to say that solid-state memory in a device like an iPad isn't going to... Get a different thermal profile, and you know, we all know that when you condense a CPU, you're gonna get a heat increase as well.
Yeah.
Whether the heat increase they've seen between iPad 2 and 3 is related to CPU or if it's something else, you know, a lot of vendors, and I think HP, I'm not sure about HP in this instance, but a lot of vendors seem to release firmware updates to address thermal issues. I know there was one come out from a phone in the early days.
Yeah, and I mean, what do you guys think from the average guy's standpoint? I don't really see average guys going out and doing firmware updates on their hard drive unless they're having a problem.
I think a lot of people, if they don't get it put in their face, they don't bother. I mean, that's where the Apple ecosystem is exceptionally good for maintaining currency of their firmware and their iOS, yeah. Especially now they've gone over the air with iCloud.
Yeah, now this is totally irrelevant, but if this is just going to be the short physics lesson to the hard drive discussion for the day, I took apart a dead Seagate, the original Western Digital Raptor, a couple weeks ago in a physics class, and just thought for the fun of it that it may be interesting.
As you would.
Yeah, of course I would. So this here is actually, these are the magnets that are stripped out of the hard drive. And hard drives are one of the best sources for finding incredibly powerful and strong magnets at a commercial level that's available to the consumer. I mean, it will take me several minutes to try and tear these magnets apart because they are so tightly wound together. And you can see actually on the video here that I have them put in these little notches, which makes it even harder. But you can see the bottom layer here and the top layer are the actual tube magnets. So they're not completely touching. If they were, it'd be even more impossible to get off. But there's that force resistance there. So this is actually what sits in between the read-write header that goes back and forth on that metal disc, and that's why they're so powerful. So yeah, they once you get them broken apart here, which I've managed to do because I left them so that they actually can come apart. Some of them you can't really get apart. But you can see on the inside, this is one face, this is the other, that's where the read-write head, and it takes nothing for those two to come together, and you don't want to keep your hands close because you can bruise your fingers really easily getting it stuck inside that magnetic grip there. The other cool thing about taking apart a hard drive is that you can get a really nice sample of what we call a primary mirror, which is this nice reflective surface where, as most mirrors that you go out and buy a store have glass in the front and back to protect the mirror, this is directly the reflective surface. So on a nice warm summer day, you can reflect this around the room and make light reflect and refract. And
shine it in your sister's eyes.
Yeah, don't shine that on another car.
Yeah. So these make for some really, really cool things to play around with. And if you're a physics geek or just a geek and you have a dead hard drive, it's a cool little project that you can go back to the glory days, or in my case, back to last week's physics lesson, and remember all that good stuff that your teacher taught you. So
what kind of exercises in physics did they put you through by taking that apart? What were you guys trying to do?
I did this mostly on my own time, but we were having a discussion on magnetism and electric current, so it was kind of relevant just to see how that affected the drive platter, and we had some old Cavalier, Western Digital Cavalier drives open, the 2 gigabyte ones with two platters that were huge.
And when you say old, you mean like 2009?
No, I mean like early 1990s.
Oh, okay.
5 1/4-inch hard drive?
Yeah, so this actually is, there was only one primary mirror in the Raptor, and you can tell it's smaller, but it is thicker. The first Western Digital Raptor came in a 40 gig model. So put two Raptors in RAID, and yeah, you had a kick RAID system for XP era days. But the neat thing there being that what was the neat thing there being?
the Raptor drives is the they're 10,000 RPM.
Yeah, drives. Thank you, John. See, John comes to save the day. Yeah, they're 10,000 RPM drives, so that's probably why there is only one platter in there, so that it can spin. Yeah. And these magnets are a bore to get apart if you don't put them back together right.
My kids used
for the longest time they used to be. I think they were like 74 gigabytes and 160 gigabyte drives. Like they weren't like you know 1.5 terabytes and 2 terabyte drives.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's only recently that above about 500 gigabytes has been a certified server class drive, so 10,000 and 15,000 RPM disks.
And right. If you ever need a workout for the average geek, just sit here all day and try and pull these apart in different configurations.
Yeah. Hours of fun.
The secret is if you can slide them, but because of the way this cage is, if you don't get like what I did right here, I didn't get the pin inside the cage, so now you can see that this side is touching the magnet completely and this side isn't, so it's like it's a joke trying to get out because one's in the notch and one isn't, so.
My kids a couple years ago, we all had just crappy hard drives laying around, and they took them apart, and we found magnets everywhere.
Yeah,
I mean, they just stuck to everything.
Yep.
And the other interesting average guy thing for a hard drive that doesn't work anymore, which is kind of cool, is you take the face off the hard drive, and it exposes that primary mirror that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Looks then nice. You carefully machine the center coil out of that. You know, the spindle is in the center there. Mm-hmm. You just machine that out. You can drill it out. You know, there's some things you can do. And then you take a little watch core, you know, that's got the hand, you know, and set that in there with the battery on the inside. And it becomes this really cool looking clock.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No hands. And it's a nice way to recycle a large hard drive.
If you're careful enough, you can open up the open face of an old drive and actually watch this spin. It's really cool to see how fast that thing moves across it. But actually, part of the physics application is that it is a hard drive is it's making magnetic patterns on that primary mirror. And so when you're saving that data, the electrons are creating the electric field that make those mirror patterns on that disk. So.
Yeah, but once you open up a drive, it becomes unusable.
Only No,
unless you're in a clean room.
If you open the face, you're all right, as long as it's not exposed to extensive electric fields. You're fine if the face is open, but if you touch it or if it gets close to anything, yeah, then you have problems. But
yeah, essentially,
and if it's a Western Digital with a screw aligning the platters, you're in trouble too.
Yes, that little notice that says "Don't remove the screw."
They mean it.
they mean it on that one because it does hold the alignment on the platters, right?
Yeah. So right now I'm in the process of trying to wedge it out with a jackknife here.
Well, you know, for the average guy, not a bad if you've got some old PCs. And,
it's fun.
You're going to turn them into Best Buy anyways or whatever to get them recycled. Pull that hard drive out and pull it apart. It is kind of a nice – there's a lot more to a hard drive than you think.
Yep.
And I asked a question last night on the show, on the home server show. I mean, how much longer are we going to hold to this 3.5-inch form factor and spinning disks? There, you got it apart. Very nice.
Now it's sticking to my knife.
You know, are we limiting ourselves by sticking to this 3.5-inch form factor for hard drives? And why do they have to be 3.5 by an inch thick or 2 inches thick or whatever that?
Well, plus we've seen the research being done for table salt drives, where the drive would have capacity for 18 terabytes. So I mean, they're tinkering.
But yeah. I just don't think we should be limited by that form factor.
Yeah.
And I think it's time. If it's time to make a change to the architecture to get more space or for it to be better for the consumer, we just need to change.
You know?
And I know solid state, at least the way in its capacity right now, more solid state does not mean better, because the smaller that gets, the less efficient it is.
Mm.
And so we're gonna, you know. I think we're going to go to – oh, Christian, I have the focus on you the whole way here. We'll take that off. I think as we move, we need less local storage and more stuff in the cloud, right?
Yeah. Well
– with connectivity?
Yeah, I guess. I don't as long as the cloud isn't being run by HP, then we're good.
Yeah, we're working for one of the larger cloud providers at the moment. It has its goods and its bads.
Yeah, I hear you.
It's putting a lot of eggs in one basket.
No, right on. So. All right, well, we have gone over time, and I want to thank the folks that have joined us out in live stream and been a part of this. I'll remind folks that if you're listening to the recorded version of this, we do record the podcast every Thursday night. We shoot for 7, but it's almost always 8 by the time we get going. But 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. And now with the time change, Andrew, what does that translate into there in Eastern Australian time?
We go back an hour next weekend, so it'll be...
Okay. So we're back to 12:30 or 11:30 or whatever.
I'll work it out when it happens.
Check the show notes. They're always right over there. And if you have any questions, comments, you'd like to send a correction on something we might have said that was wrong, podcast@theaverageguy.tv, as well as we got little forums going on Facebook. Just search for the Average Guy podcast out there, and you'll find those. Just a reminder, we are new on Stitcher now, and so if you use the Stitcher application on your iPhone or your Android device or even your HP touchpad, if you use Stitcher, just search for Home Tech Podcast, and we show up there, and you can download them automatically. All right, gentlemen, thanks for coming out tonight. I appreciate it. Andrew, have a great weekend. You're well on your way to a weekend. Hopefully you're not going to have to work too much.
No, we're doing Real Life for Life for the Cancer Council tomorrow night. So I think at the moment Michelle and I are walking for 4 hours or something tomorrow in a circle. So
oh, good.
It's that time of the
Is
year
that
again.
Good? Is that good?
it's a good charity, so good. We don't mind doing it.
Good.
It's good.
Perfect. Christian, thanks for making a whole show. Always good to have you back on the podcast, and are looking forward to maybe some remote stuff with you this summer, either here in Omaha or from Langley.
Yep.
And John, thanks for filling in on a pinch. It's always good. We look forward to having Gordon back. But John, I appreciate you coming in on the podcast. Everybody have a great night. We'll be back here next week for another round of Home Tech. Good night.
Thanks.
See you later.
Thank you.
I don't know.
Yeah, one thing you got to watch with the kids with those magnets there, when you give it to little kids there, you know, they're like little balls, you know?
They yeah,
like,
fingers
don't,
off.
Don't swallow two of them. Yeah. Then it'll get stuck in your intestines. You know, and it'll wrap your intestines together.
Well, wouldn't those, for a while, there was kind of a fad, right, about around magnetic therapy, right, where people were, you know, yeah, they would put magnets here on their wrist.
Little magnetic bracelets wrist pain. And that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they got those bracelets, right? Those, they sell them, right? It's a silver bracelet with, like, at the end, there's, like, a ball at each end. And so you just put it on there. Magnetism.
Dr. Wicks or something, isn't it?
I don't know. I heard, I don't know, maybe that's where they call it in Australia, but in Canada, I don't know, they give them another name. Not memory bracelet, or I don't know. Well,
He's not out here anymore. I should have thanked Mike Howard for all the video help that he gave me yesterday on the new broadcast server. I was just looking at some of the video, and man, it was thanks, Mike. Appreciate that. I hope it was better tonight out there. At least what I'm looking at in my monitor looks pretty darn good.
Yeah, you got to bring it up to his standard, eh?
Yeah, I needed to come up to the JPEG to RAW standard. Yeah, no, it looks, I'm looking in the monitor here and it looks pretty good, so it's kind of fun. The new broadcast server is in. I was going to talk about this, but we ran long on Skype. New broadcast server is in and working. Put a little video card in there, and that thing, we talked on the home server show last night, I think makes a nice little, or would make a nice little home server, little Core i3 home server.
Hmm.
But they're all sold out.
What box is that? Is that Fujitsu one?
Let me bring it up here. I'll I got it in the notes.
Primordial? Primeval? Prime what?
No, Primer G. Primer what?
Hold on. Primeval, Primordial.
Primeval. Yeah, here's the box right here.
Oh, yeah, I saw you post up about this one ages ago.
They're
expensive in Australia.
Really? That's too bad.
Yeah, it's like an $800 box.
$299 here in the U.S. for this box, and then
you guys suck.
It has a friend here, this $399 version that is still in stock. Core i3 2100. So this is the Sandy Bridge version of the Core i3. So a little more fuel efficient, and same. Everything else is almost identical. The real cool thing about this box is the hard drives are in a cage that sits flat against the door that you open. And so to get the hard drives out, you undo two screws, and then the cage just kind of folds out like a book, like you'd open a book. And they're accessible right there. And then they have toolless rails for it. And you just pull the rails out, slap them on the hard drive, and slide them back in. And they're kind of, I want to say they're kind of like rubbery, they're like a anti-shock, not shock, vibration.
Yeah.
Right, so they hold down the vibration of the drive itself.
Beautiful.
And it fits four in the door, and then you could easily get two more. There's room for six SATA drives on the motherboard, and it runs in RAID 0, 1, 5, 6, and 10. And then you could easily get two more drives, you know, tuck them away somewhere inside the cage easily enough with the mounts that are in there.
Yeah, when I saw your original comment, I don't know if it was Facebook or Twitter or something about this, that's when Michelle's home server at work had just died.
Right.
And so I thought, ooh, prime time to go have a look.
Yeah.
But yeah, here we go. The best price, looking at Static Ice in Australia, is $989.
Yowza. Wow. Well, I've seen them. I've seen these exact servers listed for $600 or $700 on other sites, and for whatever reason, and maybe they made too many or what, but it has been the best little here. Here's a good picture of the drive cage. Well, this is not the same setup as the one I have. This is a different box on the inside. Okay. Let me go back to that one. Let's see if they've got a picture of it here.
I don't know what I was looking at some build, some computer. I don't know if it was a media center from those guys at Tranquil or what, but it was something, it was weird. It was like, I was looking at some prices, and it ended up that the best price was for Australians.
Really? Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, I don't know why.
Our dollar's really powerful at the moment, though.
I don't know if they were an Australian company or what there, but I don't think so. But it's weird. I was surprised to see that because that's, like you say, usually.
Maybe they're manufactured there and it's just easier to, you know. Sometimes that's the case. It's manufactured locally.
Well, you know, so. Convict labor is so much cheaper.
It is. You guys make all our license plates, don't you? cracked myself up on that one. You can see the door here. It's this on the left side. It's this is kind of the hinge, and then right here on the right side is the. Is a little, you know, it's like the door, and you just unscrew that, and that thing just comes right out. And then if you look down here, those are those, you can see it's got a couple drive rails that are in there ready for this, and those are toolless.
That's sweet.
You open that up, and you get full access to the board. The SATA ports, I wish they had a picture of that thing opened up. That gives me an op. Maybe this weekend I'll open mine up and take some photos. But,
so they're mounted, vertical. No?
Yeah, yeah. They kind of, you know, they're kind of to the like you said, John. The thing that was most impressive is vertically. Yeah, thing that's impressive is you can see in this picture here, they've got little clips, little tie down clips. The whole inside of the case is that way for everything. And so if you put when you put the SATA drives in and you connect them, there's cable runs for everything. And it really keeps your cables nice and neat in there. I mean, it really was well thought of and well designed. I think, you know, if now the case, the like I said, the other one's a little different. If this ever goes back on sale for $299, I'd highly recommend it. It's been a good little box.
But those drives, they're like two, they're four drives, like you said, but it's like two up and then two down, right?
Correct. Yeah, one on top of the other. Yeah.
So it's not like a standard cage where they stack the four.
No. But you know what?
When you look at the size of that drive, you know, it kind of gives an impression of the size of the case. You know, because that's a small case.
Well, it looks small. It's not as small as it. It's a little fatter there. I mean, look at the back. You know, there's some extra. You know, typically the case would end right about here. They expand. It's a little bit wider to accommodate one more drive.
It's a little bit short on the front, though, right? The length of it is.
I got to jump into another meeting, guys. I'll have to.
All right, Andrew.
Fly.
Yep,
I'll look out for the roar in the Dropbox gym.
Yeah, I'll have it out there tonight.
Cool. See you, guys.
Thanks, Andrew. Have a good night.
Yeah, Andrew.
Bye.
Yeah. No, it's. You'd think it's small, but from the pictures, but it really is just the average desktop size.
Okay.
But you could put drives behind these two.
Those are 3.5-inch.
Yeah.
That's it. Those are
punch outs.
Yeah, but they're floppy drives.
Right. Yeah, which is kind of silly.
Yeah.
Probably for a tape drive, maybe, or something.
Or maybe you could put like SD card changer. You know, like some of the SD cards, they have USBs, they have a multiple card changer, whatever they call those things.